the briefing on international agreement by the Department of Energy, and I'm going to ask the department to introduce itself, the team to introduce itself, and proceed to make the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to Honorable Members. My name is Elizabeth Maraba. I'm the Chief Director for International Coordination and will be making a presentation. I'm accompanied by my colleague, Mr. Siri, who is the Director for International Relations in the Department of Energy as well. Thank you. I can proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
From Minister.
Today we are just going to give you a presentation on the briefing on our international agreement by the Department of Energy. We will here give you a short introduction, then we will talk to bilateral agreements, the discipline that is hydrocarbons, clean energy, electricity, a little bit of nuclear. On nuclear we are not going to say much because most of the nuclear issues are classified information. I mean, we don't discuss them. We need to get prior arrangement for us to get permission to discuss the details of agreements before we can present them. Then I'll also speak to our agreements on energy planning and also the multilateral agreements that we have signed with different institutions. In the discussion, I saw that there was a need to focus on Africa and SADC. As we do presentations on different disciplines, we are also going to highlight the agreements that are from the African countries and the issues pertaining to the SADC region. As you will see, because we did a presentation on the international activities, some of the information that we are presenting today, we have already presented to you, but for the sake of ensuring that the presentation was comprehensive, we included the information because we are not presented in February. Then we will give you a brief conclusion. In terms of introduction, basically our international relations and strategies based on the need for the country to ensure that the grid of supply of particularly oil and gas. We also have the grid of supply of electricity. Then we also focus on energy access, and we subscribe to the principle of universal energy access for all as prescribed by the UN Secretary General Declaration for 2012. We also talk to issues of energy access in terms of affordability and accessibility and access to clean and sustainable energy. So our international agreements are actually framed with that perspective and is aligned to the Department's mandate and to promote development in South Africa. But the focus of our international strategy is also aligned to the Department of International Relations white paper on policy, on foreign policy, as well as the strategy on international relations. So we, in terms of that strategy on international relations, the priority for South Africa is to look at the region, that is the SADC region, then the African continent, then the South-South cooperation, and lastly the North-South cooperation. So the international relations strategy is coined and developed and implemented with that policy configuration in mind. In terms of hydrocarbons, as I've already indicated, for hydrocarbons we are looking at security of oil and gas supply through access to producing and near producing assets, and the need to also diversify our sources of supply of oil and gas. With respect to that, we have signed a number of agreements, and one of them is on Venezuela. Within Venezuela, we have signed a government-to-government MOU, which would provide it for the PetroSA to explore opportunities in Venezuela. As a result of that, PetroSA also subsequently signed an agreement with PDVSA, which is the national oil company in Venezuela. It has since been allocated some blocks, and they are conducting studies on the blocks, on the blocks that have been allocated, and they will be going into finalization of that particular, of those particular blocks, so that they can go into production if the investigation is successful. Then we also have an agreement with Egypt in South Africa, the MOU was signed in 2010. It was initially a government-to-government MOU, which paved the way for PetroSA to also sign an agreement with the national oil company in Egypt. They did gave access to some blocks, but some of them were not successful. But the activities there are still continuing, and currently they are waiting for the way. Because of the instability in the country, some activities were lying low, but they will be resuscitated as the current administration settles in. Then we also signed last year an agreement with Ghana, a government-to-government MOU on oil and gas. As you are aware, Ghana is one of the prolific countries in terms of oil and gas in West Africa. It is new, and there are quite a number of opportunities. And PetroSA is also currently working on an implementation plan and is looking forward to exploring opportunities in that respective country. So we have an agreement with Ghana, and we are looking forward to gaining a lot of out of it. We are also working on an agreement that will cover energy in general, particularly focusing on electricity, just to be in a position to assist Ghana in their electrification program, like we have rolled it out in South Africa. So that energy agreement is still under consideration. It's not yet finalized. It's not yet agreed on the date of the agreement. Then in terms of Algeria, we also signed an MOU on air and gas in Algeria, and subsequent to that, PetroSA signed an MOU with the Nigerian oil company, and we are also currently preparing a visit to go to Algeria so that we can get the opportunity in Algeria. So most of these agreements that have been signed, they are quite recent, and PetroSA particularly following up on developing implementation plans. Then with respect to nuclear, NEXA signed an MOU with the Nigerians, and they are also in discussions to develop the implementation plan with respect to that particular agreement. In 2009, the department signed an agreement with Angola on the oil and gas, and the other one was signed on electricity. With the one on oil and gas, we have developed also in a government-to-government agreement, and an agreement is being developed for PetroSA and Sonangol to implement. We had a number of it to Angola in order to facilitate the relationship between PetroSA and Sonangol. They are currently in discussion and exploring opportunities for specific blocks that have been offered to them. But at this point in time, it's not yet been successful. So the negotiations are still going on. With respect to electricity, we developed an implementation plan for electrification program in Angola, and there are opportunities for South African companies to assist in the implementation plan. But because most of the projects there are in Angola, we are waiting for the Angolans to initiate the process so that companies can actually go and initiate the implementation program. So the implementation plan has been developed and signed off by the two ministers. It's just awaiting implementation. Then another important relationship that we have is with Mozambique. The Eden agreement that was signed, and also another agreement was signed between PetroSA and Mozambique. Then there's an agreement between the government, SAFO, and the Mozambican government. The important issue that we have, for example, and I took up in Mozambique is the Mozambique South Africa Gas Commission. That Mozambique South Africa Gas Commission is going to be a gas project that we have with Mozambique. But as you are aware, SASO is working in the Panic Money gas field, and they are producing gas which is then transported to SASO Bay for use into the chemical plant and into the production of gas to the coal to liquids. So that project is going on very well. The amount of gas that is being exported from Mozambique has increased. We do not have any problems, and as you are aware, Mozambique has also discovered substantial gas reserves in and in South Africa, it is imperative that we look at the opportunity of utilizing the gas and introduce the gas in not only South Africa, but in the region. Another very important issue regarding gas is the fact that if we want to reduce our carbon footprint, gas is one of those energy carriers that we can use as a transitional energy carrier to move to more cleaner and sustainable energy sources. So gas is very important to South Africa and to the region, especially given the fact that we also have gas discoveries in Tanzania. There is a very serious potential for gas in East Africa. We also have gas on the West Africa, and there is potential for gas on the Southern Africa. So the whole part of Southern Africa, if you look at the East and you look at the West and you look at the South part, on our continental shelves, there is potential for gas. So it is imperative for us to expand our initiatives and maybe look into developing a regional gas master plan. Then with Namibia also, we do have a relationship, as we have also developed a South Africa-Namibia Gas Commission. The responsibility of the commission is priority one is to look at the commercialization of the Kudu gas. It has been a challenge. The negotiations have been on the table for a long time, but the challenge is one, the Kudu gas is not quite substantive, and the commercial discussions, we are not reaching an agreement. And it is very important maybe that if we can discover more gas in the surrounding areas, they need to assist in the commercialization of the Kudu gas. There are opportunities also upstream for PetroSA to explore. PetroSA has one perspective on one of the blocks on the Namibian continental shelf, and the activities in terms of exploration by other companies are going on, and we are looking forward to more cooperation and more gas discoveries so that we may possibly develop a gas regional master plan that can be used to reduce the standard carbon footprint. Then in terms of oil trading, we do have a lot of engagement with Angola, Nigeria, and Mozambique for gas in terms of trading. If you look at the imports from South African companies, there's been an increase of in terms of import of crude from both Angola and Nigeria, which signifies the importance to be looking within the continent to get our own crude requirements. Then in terms of gas, we are importing mainly from Mozambique. Then in terms of gas, also different types of gas, there is a potential for coal-based methane in Botswana, in Zimbabwe, and also in South Africa. Those are some of the opportunities that we need to look at if we are going to be focusing more on reducing our carbon footprint. Then another important element in our engagement with the Department of Energy is to focus also on the infrastructure development. In terms of that, we have had engagement with the Chinese. We have shown interest in the development of the Mutombo project. Subsequent to signing an energy MOU, PetroSA in 2011 signed an agreement with Sinopec, and the agreement, among other things, looks at the development of Mutombo refinery project. And my understanding is that they are in earnest discussions with Sinopec to see if there are possibilities of Sinopec engaging with the PetroSA in the development of Mutombo project. And also better to engage on wholesale trading and distribution of petroleum products in South Africa and in Southern Africa in general. As you are also aware, PetroSA has got a number of blocks outside South Africa that they are exploring, and Sinopec is one of the top 500 companies in the world, and it has got extensive experience and is quite skilled in the upstream. It will be also anticipated that PetroSA can take into the skills of Sinopec and be assisted in conducting its exploration on the upstream, mainly on the continent and also in other countries such as Venezuela. So one of the relationships with Sinopec will actually focus on acquiring skills that would assist PetroSA in the upstream exploration. Then we also do have a relationship with the China Development Bank. As you are aware, I indicated that the department signed an agreement with the China Development Bank, and according to that agreement, and the China Development Bank is set aside about 20 billion that would be used to develop the energy infrastructure in South Africa. The Department of Energy, together with the National Treasury, are currently engaged in the terms of the funding, which needs to comply with the South African industrial policy, the need for ensuring that the policy will facilitate the funding will be in a way that it will facilitate technology transfer, job creation, industrialization, and the development of the South African economy in general. So the terms of the funds have to comply with those provisions as articulated by our policies, both from an industry perspective and industrialization perspective, and also from a job creation perspective. So we are in earnest discussions with the China Development Bank in order to elaborate the terms of the funding and ensure that there is mutual benefit from utilization of the Chinese funds. I think I have already articulated on the slide number 8 where we just said the funding should be of mutual benefit. It must lead to localization, technology transfer, and skill development. Then another important arrangement in terms of the department is to ensure security of supply and access to clean energy and sustainable affordable energy area for South Africa, for SADC, and for the continent. When we do engage, particularly in the continent, we ensure that we also don't focus on extracting benefits for South Africa, but we also have mutual benefits with respective countries. As you are aware, particularly sub-Saharan Africa is not has got a huge deficit of power, and energy poverty is quite significant and one of the highest in the world. And to facilitate the development of the energy sector, we participate in the different energy power pools, we participate in the African Energy Ministers Conferences, and which are coordinated by the AU. And through that, we also, through our bilaterals, ensure that if countries request for assistance in the electrification programs, in the energy efficiency programs, and even in training, we do facilitate and request our stakeholders, such as ESCOM, to provide training at cost, and also the department and industry to also provide information, particularly on energy efficiency, to different stakeholders. For example, we have had a visit from the Tanzanians, I think, and we are recently, in a few weeks' time, going to have a visit from the Zambians who want to learn more about the energy efficiency program. Then we also have a number of inquiries and visits from African countries who want to understand our petroleum pricing mechanism so that they can deploy it in their respective countries. So we extensively engage with these African countries in order to assist them. But in the electricity sector, it's mainly to ensure that we give them information on the electrification program, the way that it has been implemented in South Africa, and so that they can also use their policy in order to assist in the deployment of electricity. Then we also have a relationship with countries such as India and then Brazil under the ITSA, and we also cooperate with other Latin American countries. But of the countries that I have just highlighted here, I have a significant relationship. For example, with India, South Africa signed a cooperation agreement on electricity, and we learn a lot from the electrification program and energy planning in general. Not much has been done, but as you are aware, India is taking a lead in the renewable energy sector, and we recently met with the Director General of the Ministry of Renewable Energy in South Africa, and we also work with them through the IRENA, which is the International Renewable Energy Agency. They've made significant progress, and we are learning a lot from their implementation program. South Africa can benefit from the lessons and avoid some of the errors that have been committed by other countries. Then we also have recently signed an agreement with Botswana on energy, on energy in general, but it will involve electricity and trading of electricity and then trading the petroleum products. As you are aware, Botswana currently imports some of its electricity from the Southern African power pool, but it also has a number of projects on electricity that are being developed in the country, and the two countries can mutually benefit by working together in the electricity sector. Then we also signed an agreement with Zambia, and the special focus is on electricity and energy efficiency. Eskom is currently working with the Zambians on an implementation plan to give effect to the signed MOU, and Eskom is also working with the Zambians to do electrification of some of their districts. We are also looking forward to clean energy projects that are being initiated in Zambia. And such energy can also be added to our power pool and traded within the region, and South Africa can benefit from importing clean energy, which would assist us in neutralizing our carbon footprint. Then the GOE is taking a significant lead in the region in terms of energy efficiency and programs, and most of the neighboring countries like Zambia, they also depend on us in terms of lessons that they can learn from us. Then in terms of electricity, you are aware, honorable members, that Mozambique has got a potential for renewable energy, particularly hydro. We are also working very closely with Mozambique so that it can develop its renewable energy sector that we can benefit from. Then we are also working in terms of the development of the transmission network. Mozambique has got a special project that is a transmission project called the Beacon Project. I will show it on the map later, which would assist in the integration and strengthening of interconnectivity within the SADC region if that project is executed successfully. Then with respect to Lesotho, we are aware that we signed an agreement with Lesotho last year on the back of the water agreement. Lesotho has got huge hydro potential, and they would want to work with the Department of Energy to be able to explore and exploit the hydroelectricity being developed in that particular area. They also have huge wind energy capability, and they also have a solar energy capacity. So we are working with them in order to assist them to develop that potential with a view to potentially import some of the clean energy into the South African grid and into the other grid in general. You are also aware, honorable members, that we signed an agreement with the GRC last year on the Grand Inga project. After signing the MOU, it provided for the development of a treaty on the Grand Inga. The two countries, after signing the MOU, engaged on the development of a draft treaty. South Africa recently completed the development of that Grand Inga draft treaty from the South African side, and the GRC has also completed their draft treaty. We are now in a position to exchange the two treaties and negotiate a combined treaty. As you are aware, the Grand Inga has the potential for 40,000 megawatts. There's a potential to generate approximately 40,000 megawatts of electricity. This project has been on the table for almost 50 years, and it is really envisaged that time to develop that Grand Inga is now, and that countries such as South Africa, which are huge importers of users of electricity, needs to take a lead to ensure that this particular project is developed. Once the project is developed, it will definitely benefit to alleviate energy poverty within the GRC itself, within the SADC region, and there is potential to also export the energy to Central Africa, to West Africa, and to North Africa. There are interests that have been expressed by countries in West Africa to be uptakers of the electricity, and also countries in North Africa. And it will assist us as a continent to vigorously engage in the development of clean and sustainable energy care. So the Grand Inga has that huge potential. So we are currently on each side completed the draft treaty, and we are now preparing to meet and negotiate on the treaty. Then in terms of in terms of the clean energy projects in general, we do have a number of agreements with different countries which focus on clean energy initiatives. For example, we have the Switzerland with Switzerland an agreement on energy efficiency. That particular agreement has assisted us in developing the modeling or which would the tool that would assist us in measuring and reporting on the implementation on energy efficiency. In order for us to be able to measure the level of progress that has been attained by energy efficiency in developed programs in South Africa, we need to have a tool that is internationally recognized, that measurement is internationally benchmarked, so that we can be comparing ourselves with stakeholders at an international level. So Switzerland has assisted us in developing that tool, and once it is completed, we can then, with the most certainty, measure the level of energy efficiency in South Africa and the progress thereof. We also have an agreement with Denmark, and the agreement basically focuses on renewable energy and energy efficiency. As you are aware, honourable members, Denmark is a global leader in wind energy. And through this agreement, we have been able to embark on a wind awareness campaign. We have developed a wind atlas for South Africa. We are also looking at the development of skills and technology transfer as some of the positions that will be gained through the relationship. So we have actually now an atlas of our own. We are initiating a wind energy awareness campaign, and it has been all through to the things to the relationship, to our relationship with Denmark. Then on a multilateral level, we do have the IPSA relationship, and for South Africa, the IPSA relationship is assisting us mainly in a biofuels area, where India and Brazil have got a lead in biofuels. We want to introduce biofuels in South Africa. We already have a refinery license for biofuels, but to develop that, we need to ensure that South Africa will benefit from it, and that we have farmers that will be able to produce a feedstock that will be used in our relation in our refineries. So in order for us to do that, the relationship between the IPSA is actually assisting us, and South Africa is benefiting from lessons from particularly Brazil. Workshops have been undertaken, and the work is advanced, and we are also working on fast-tracking the biofuels implementation program in the country. Then another important multilateral relationship that South Africa has is a member is the International Renewable Energy Agency. South Africa is a member of this particular agency. We are also a council member of IRENA. We have supported the appointment of the Minister of Energy in Mozambique to be the council president for IRENA. And this particular organization is really benefiting particularly developing countries and the continent in particular to deploy renewable energy in the continent and worldwide. This initiative also is supportive of the sustainable energy development worldwide, and also in reducing the energy footprint generated by the energy sector. So we have also used the IRENA to assist us in giving a training to our journalists in the country. During COP17, a number of seminars were held so that they educate particularly the journalists who are reporting to our public, so that they report more accurately and educate people on renewable energy initiatives worldwide. Then we also, through the IRENA, have been participating in the development of the Global Wind Atlas, but specifically we have motivated that the Global Wind Atlas should focus on developing an African Wind Atlas. Once you have a wind atlas, it will assist investors to identify potential areas where investment in wind-related projects can be deployed on the continent. So that has been agreed, and the launch of that particular initiative was done during the RioPlus20, and Minister Peters was a participant in that and signatory to the initiative of developing a global wind atlas with a special focus on Africa. South Africa is also a member of what is known as the Clean Energy Ministerial. This initiative is also looking at the rollout of clean energy initiatives globally. The Clean Energy Ministerial has got a membership of about 24 countries. These are the major economies forum, and they generate 80% and consume more than 80% of energy globally. So it is a very powerful a multilateral with South Africa is the only African member participating. Through this Clean Energy Ministerial, there are 11 initiatives. Those 11 initiatives focus on, one is on solar and wind energy, the other one is what we call Supercriterial Energy Reformance Partnership, which really wants to reduce global energy use in the industrial sector, such as the cement and the fuel industries. It also wants to reduce energy consumption in the energy management systems in those industrial areas. Then we also have, I think I've cut out some of the initiatives here. There's an energy efficiency initiative, there's electric vehicle initiative, there's also the carbon cap and storage action group, which focuses on the technology, the policies, and there is also a special focus on assisting developing countries that want to participate in carbon capture and storage initiatives. Then there's the solar and LED, which is the solar light program that will enhance access, energy access to developing countries, and it has a special focus on the African continent and on India. Then we also have a smart grid initiative, which looks at the development of the smart grid or intelligent grid, to ensure that those intelligent grids are able to uptake intermittent energy from particularly your renewable energy, which is not very consistent in terms of generating electricity. If you are generating electricity from wind, it is usually intermittent. It depends on whether wind is available at a time. So the smart grid will assist in the ability to be able to understand the system and be able to take other sources of energy from elsewhere without having an interruption of the system. Then we also have the Super Efficient Appliance Deployment Initiative, which is basically focusing on the home use of energy efficient appliances such as your refrigerators, your irons, your toasts, your heaters, and so on and so forth. Then another important initiative of this Clean Energy Ministerial is what we call the CCE, which is Energy Education and Empowerment of Women. Given that the Clean Energy Initiative, particularly the deployment of wind energy, solar energy, and energy efficient appliances, it is like a revolution within an energy sector. Given that it is developing at this point in time in our history, it is important that the energy sector, which has been mainly dominated by males, can now accommodate women through a direct intervention where women are empowered through education, and particularly encouraged to focus on science-related subjects, mathematics, and also to take courses that are focused on clean energy industries. And the initiatives, as far as those initiatives are concerned, the Minister of Energy has been nominated to represent South Africa and also to represent the African continent to promote the C3E initiative. Another important initiative is the what we have also within the context of the renewable energy, the South African Renewable Energy Initiative. We have presented on the study initiative before, I think, sometime this year, and I thought it's important to update you on the progress of the study initiative. The study has now been moved to the Department of Energy. We have done a business case for the initiative. We have applied for funding from National Treasury to fund the unit, and the National Treasury is currently waiting on developing a financial tool that would assist us in deploying the funds and ensuring that the funds are used appropriately and that the way the funds are used are in line with the PFMA and in compliance with all other financial provisions of the country. So press, we have translated, and we are now looking forward to provision of funding in order to employ one voice to populate the unit. South Africa, the Department of Energy, South Africa is a member of the African Union, and it is also a member of our organization that subscribes to promotion of the energy sector in Africa. We are a member of the Africa EU Energy Partnership, and the aim of that energy partnership is to promote the development of sustainable energy areas in the continent, and to also ensure that in the promotion of sustainable energy carriers, we involve the private sector, we involve the civil society, we involve the researchers, so that the deployment of renewable energy benefits the continent. The reason why it is important to have those stakeholders is at a political and policy level, you can express aspiration to do things, but it is the private sector and public sector to some extent that have to invest the money, and it is important to bring them on board and to educate them on the policies and the initiatives so that they can be prepared to invest their money in the renewable energy sector in the society. Because we are also bringing in new forms of energy, it is important to educate the civil society of the different energy carriers, their benefits, and also to demystify some of them, because for example, some ministries may not be interested in having solar energy because the yield is not reliable. So by educating civil society, it will assist in ensuring that such means are demystified. Then if the continent is going to benefit from the renewable energy initiative, it is important to make sure that the technologies that are developed elsewhere are actually absorbed. They are also innovated in order for them to be used in the continent. So the research and the universities are also co-opted so that they can be sensitized to the development of the renewable energy sector and also encouraged to participate as researchers in the incremental innovation of technologies to be deployed on the continent, and also to ensure that our institutions benefit from research that is emanating from these new forms of technologies. The Africa-EU Energy Partnership has made political targets to be made by 2020, and those political targets, they are not very high, but significant and important, and at least having targets is important because you can measure the progress or lack of by looking at the way the target has been set. For example, under renewable energy and energy efficiency, they have agreed that 10,000 megawatts of new hydro facilities need to be developed, 5,000 megawatts of wind power need to be generated, 500 megawatts of solar energy needs also to be generated, and to triple the capacity of other renewable energy and improve the energy efficiency in the African continent in general. Then under energy access, they have also committed to ensuring that there is access to sustainable energy carriers to at least 100 million people by 2020. In terms of interconnectivity within the different regional power pools, they also indicated that they want to double the capacity of the cross-border electricity interconnection, and also to increase interconnectivity between Africa and the EU, particularly in North Africa. There is also a commitment to double the use of natural gas in the continent, as well as doubling export to the EU. As you are aware, honorable members, in terms of gas, some of our African producing, African countries that are richly including natural gas, as they produce petroleum, they flare their gas, and the aim of this particular project is to ensure that instead of flaring gas, that gas can be used for space heating, for generating electricity, and for cooking and exporting to the EU and intra-African trade. Another important organization to which the Department of Energy is a membership is the African Energy Unit Conference. That conference, the department has made a contribution. We did host the preparation, the African Energy Ministers conference in which we were scheduled to prepare for COP17, out of that particular initiative, a declaration was done by 45 countries, and that declaration made a commitment that those governments representing committed themselves to the development of sustainable energy carriers, but they also highlighted the need for funding, technology transfer, technology and skills transfer in order for the African countries to deploy sustainable energy carriers in their respective countries and contribute to reducing the climate change. So we did host that particular conference together with the African Union, and we were also assisted financially by the World Bank. So we, as a department, we did make a contribution. And in May, as you are aware, we also hosted the Africa EU Energy Partnership Forum here in Cape Town, and part of that initiative was to bring together the academics, the civil societies, the private sector, the researchers into a discussion on how to implement the political and global targets that had been set by the minister. And some resolutions were taken and actions will follow, and there's an e-platform that has been formed where discussions are ongoing with different stakeholders on the continent in order to ensure that we reach the targets set by the political principles in 2010. South Africa is also a member of the International Energy Agency. As you are aware, this is one of the agencies that does conduct prolific research in the energy sector. They are on the edge. They have developed so many different roadmaps for different energy technologies. And we have, in 2011, signed an agreement with them. The agreement focuses on promoting capacity building and supporting our energy planning and research unit within the Department of Energy. As you are aware, the department is developing an energy plan, the integrated energy plan for the country, and to do that it requires significant modeling skills. It also requires a lot of skills, and the IEA will assist us in developing some of our colleagues so that the modeling capability enhanced. And then it also will capacitate the department by conducting various modeling agencies, so modeling initiatives for different energy carriers. In terms of nuclear, I think the department has got a number of relationships, particularly with the IAEA. We also have a few agreements with the respective countries, and most of the relationships that we have are with countries and institutions that promote the safe use of nuclear and adhere to the principles of non-proliferation. South Africa is also very up to date and working closely on the Fukushima nuclear disaster in order to learn the lessons of the Fukushima disaster and ensure that we prevent such happenings in South Africa, and that we are also, we enhance our state of readiness in the event of anything of that nature. So we do have bilateral relationships with countries such as Russia, Algeria, South Korea, and China. And we are currently exploring cooperation with other African countries such as Uganda and Ghana that have also nuclear aspirations. Some of these countries, they have reached out and we are negotiating agreements in that respect. The department has also benefited from exchange of information capacity building from these bilateral relationships. And we also have benefited from our multilateral relationship with the International Atomic Energy Agency. As you are aware, the International Atomic Energy offers a training to different governments. They also offer training to institutions. They also offer training to our regulators, and they also provide some policy guidance on particular issues related to safety in the nuclear field. Then another important issue and engagement that the department conducts is to secure funding for the renewable energy initiative. And as I've already explained, we signed the SARI initiative, and we are in the process of operationalizing that particular initiative. I've already explained other important multilateral agreements that the department has signed, the focus on sharing of information and capacity building. For example, we are members of the Carbon Sequestration Leadership Forum. This is an organization that is responsible for formulating policies, recommending technologies, following up implementation of projects on carbon capture and storage, and giving information on the outcome of the different projects that are implemented at a global level. I have already spoken about the International Atomic Energy Agency to provide extensive training for the nuclear sector in the country, besides also giving policy guidelines on issues related to safety, waste management from the nuclear field, so on and so forth. Then South Africa is also a member of the International Energy Forum. The International Energy Forum is one of the forums or one of the organizations that provides a dialogue between all producing countries or all in gas producing countries and then all in gas consuming countries. This is a platform where the same issues affecting the energy sector are discussed. They focus on pricing, they focus on investment, they focus on even strategies to reducing the climate change impact from the oil and gas sector. They also focus on skills development. It has got a wide range of issues, and it provides that platform where they bring in together of minds from producing countries and from consuming countries. And it is a very vibrant organization which is based in Saudi Arabia, and it has a membership of about 85 countries. As you are also aware, in terms of our regional initiatives, South Africa is a member of the SADC region. We are very actively involved as a region. This current year, there has been development of different master plans, the energy master plan, which also focuses on electricity and oil and gas, but particularly more emphasis on petroleum. That process has been almost completed and will be tabled to the Energy Ministers meeting and was also put across as a project in progress on the Heads of Summit meeting that has been was recently held in Mozambique. We also focusing on the policy-related issues in order to synchronize our regulatory framework within the region in order to be able to attract investment within the region. There is the regional electricity regulatory authority that meets regularly to try and align themselves in an effort to make sure that there is a synchronization of regulatory policies to ensure that we have cross-border investment in the energy sector within the region. We also, there have been capacity building workshops that have been conducted by SADC with the assistance of the Department of Energy, particularly in the clean development mechanism, since South Africa is taking a lead on the region in terms of CDM. And then on biofuels, there was a biofuel strategy that was also, that is currently in formulation, and there are also other issues that are not related to those biofuels and food security issues that were discussed under the topic of biofuels and the impact being in the region. While we want to focus on biofuels, we must not sacrifice the food security issue. And another important project that is being done under SADC is the data collection. The SADC region can only be able to understand the status of the energy sector if we have got an efficient data collection mechanism, which can then provide information to government, to potential investors, and to interested parties. And once we do have good quality data, then we can initiate development of the energy sector. So that initiative is in progress. Another important area is the Southern African power pool. I cannot really overemphasize the need for interconnectivity. As you are aware, the integrated resource plan provides for import of clean energy from the region. That can only be facilitated if the Southern African power pool as an initiative is developed to the standard, which is important. As I've also discussed, I've indicated that if we are going to seriously engage on the renewable energy route, it is also important that we modernize our interconnections to ensure that they are more efficient and effective and they've got the ability to uptake intermittent supply of energy from intermittent sources. So the Southern African Power Pool has made a significant progress. It also is a project that they have tabled, and I've presented these projects before, but I will also include them in the presentation today. Then in terms of power pooling, as I've presented it before, there is a power trading that is going on in the region. Different utilities are putting power in the system, and that is in process. But as a region, I presented this before, I indicated that as a region we have a power deficit. If you compare the SADC region and the other power pools, we are lagging behind in terms of economic growth. Our growth rate is actually around, on average, about 3%. Or just under 3%, and one of the reasons for that is that as a region we don't have enough power supply, and we need to do a lot more in order to increase our investment and have more power generated from the region. These are some of the transmission projects that are on the table from the region. I've shown you this map, I think, in February, and the projects are still changing, and the rest the projects are the initiatives that need to be put in place. And of significant importance to us as a country is the Mozambique and Backbone project. It is important. We are also going to be getting power from the DRC. We need to make sure that our regional interconnectivity is strengthened, that the systems are efficient to ensure that we have adequate ability to transmit power efficiently. So those are the projects that are put under the Southern African Power Pool is transmission projects. Then the other project that has been approved by the SADC region is the transmission backbone in Mozambique. The North Bank, then there is also the HCT North Bank in Mozambique again. We have got the Panuco Hydro Project in Mozambique. We also have the Pachoka Hydro Project in Zambia and Zimbabwe. We also have the Kakwe Gorge Power in Zambia, then the Kariba South Extension and the Kudu Gas Power Project, in which we are also negotiating. We are also involved, and I've indicated that the Kudu Power Project, we are currently having a negotiation on it. We are focusing more on the issue of the commercialization and the pricing of related to that and to the project, and we are still involved in extensive discussions with Namibia. Then other projects, the Zambia Interconnector, I've shown it, then Mozambique Malawi Interconnector, I've also shown it, Namibia Angola Interconnector, the GRC Interconnector, the Zizabona, and so on and so forth. So we are aware of what we need in the region. There are projects on the table. The challenge is now to conduct feasibility studies in order to make sure that these are moved to bankable projects. One that I know where the feasibility study has been conducted is the Mozambique Backbone project. And those are some of the projects that are regional projects that I have just outlined, and those are the estimates that are associated with those projects. But what we really need is very concrete feasibility studies in order to market the individual projects and be able to operationalize those plans. Then one of the questions that was given to the department was to discuss on energy diplomas. I'm not so sure about it, but I have attempted to indicate what we do in order to promote energy diplomas, particularly with the department of our Department of International Relations. The DOE works closely with its immediate stakeholders, such as SOEs, companies that are outside the country in the energy sector. So we do have an intimate knowledge of what companies are doing outside, and when we also go outside the country, sometimes we take some of these companies to visit with. The DOE work with also the departments. In fact, we work with the three spheres of government to ensure that the interests in the energy sector are permeated And also when we developed the, we were developing the energy strategy, which is in a draft format, we have been in consultation with the different stakeholders. Then we also, on a day-to-day basis, work with respective desks and units in the Department of International Relations. We also work with our missions outside. So when we want to have any bilateral relationship with any country, we consult with the desk, we consult with the mission, we also consult with the multilateral unit and other spheres of government in order to be able to get intelligence with respect to the initiative that we want to undertake. So we get our political energy diplomats from PICO. We also get security energy diplomats from relevant stakeholders of our security institutions. We also have economic intelligence on energy that we get from the ETI, and we also get a global understanding of geopolitics of energy. We went together with our missions and our UN representatives and our UN desk and the Department of International Relations. And we, when we do engage, we do a political, security, social, and geopolitical analysis of our relationship and its implications on the energy sector. That's how we define our energy diplomacy. So in conclusion, we can say that the department has initiated both multilateral and bilateral relations that focus on ensuring that the country's access to secure, affordable and accessible energy. We access funding, particularly to be able to fund the energy infrastructure program that we have put on the table through the IRP 2010. We need to facilitate technology. If you can, for the next 10 years, investment in the energy sector is going to be substantive. And it is important that such investment does not just generate energy to the country, but it also results in economic growth and economic development and transformation of our industrial sector. And that can only happen through technological innovation, technology transfer and skills development that will then assist us to deploy energy technologies extensively in the country and promote localization and job creation. We also focus on embracing the African continent and ensure that we comply with the provisions of the UN Secretary General to ensure energy, access to sustainable energy on the continent, especially sub-Saharan Africa and the rest of the world, and we do our part to assist particularly the African continent on the electrification program in the SADC region. We also promote the South-South cooperation, but we don't forget the North-South, and we align ourselves with the TICO foreign policy. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure this is the adequate computer.
Maybe planned to cheer you. Thanks very much. Good afternoon, honorable members. Apologies. I had a demand on a Tuesday. My transport and other commitments messed me up in Johannesburg. I suppose then let's thank Ms. Narawa for her presentation. She caught at the tail end. I will definitely hand over to one of the members for questions, clarity thinking, as well as comments. Honorable Failing, Honorable Ross.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a comprehensive presentation and you cover a lot of areas. So, yeah, I might have to take a couple of bites, but let me just start off then with the hydrocarbons. Your first slide, and when you talk about Venezuela and that we signed an agreement and secured blocks to explore for oil there, what you didn't mention in your next slide was that we also, Petro also explored for oil and gas, I think it was, in Equatorial Guinea. Now, I remember bringing this up as an issue that with, along with Egypt and Equatorial Guinea, we spent about 2 billion rand and have come up with nothing in those areas. And we need to be assured, though, I mean, I know that it's a risky business, and I know that you're not always going to find oil and gas when you go explore, but you know, what you're talking about a marginal block in Venezuela. Are we assured that there is going to definitely be something in it for the country and for FSA, that we will actually be able to secure some oil blocks there and some oil discoveries? Then when we talk about the gas, I mean, it's great that you bring it up because we had a very good presentation, I think it was on Friday, I think it was or a week ago, right? Talking about regional gas finds that we made and how we really need to move fast as a country to ensure that we can capture some of that gas. Because as I see it, a number of countries, including Japan, are moving into the area and are certainly wanting to get their hands on the gas that's in Mozambique and in Tanzania. And it's fine to talk about MOUs and it's fine to talk about the fact that there is this gas there, but what concrete kind of negotiations have gone on with Mozambique and with Tanzania? And what kind of infrastructure plans are we talking about as well? Because, you know, for us to buy the gas, we also need to have, as you say, a regional gas master plan that talks about the infrastructure investment. Because we can't unlock that gas unless we've got an anchor buyer in South Africa. And is this something that the department is looking at? And if so, what is your strategy going forward on this? Because I just get the sense that you might miss the boat on this. A lot of people want the gas that's in East Africa. And the issue is, are we going to move fast enough as a country to make sure that we actually are able to secure some of that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me also to make a few comments and perhaps a question or two. Chair, with regard to the China Development Bank, we signed an MOU and perhaps a statement of intent in terms of access funding. Is there perhaps a possibility that we can have more details on this? You've mentioned that 20 billion could be allocated that we need. That's the need for our, to comply with our needs in terms of electricity. How far have we progressed in terms of the Chinese Development Bank? I think it could be a major source of. I know that the minister indicated a while ago that there was a memo of understanding. Was there any further progress in this regard? Chair, then with regard to India, I'd be very interested to know the IRMA-related models of India and what we've learned from them. I believe that India sets a good example in terms of the turnaround strategy, how to get people to have access to electricity. And I think there's something that we can learn from the Indian experience. If we can perhaps have more information regarding that, and is it not possible that we can have a presentation with regard to this from India? I think there's a learning lesson for us in this. And then the DRC, also MOE on the ground Inga project. What would be the details of the transmission if this project is implemented? Is there any progress in terms of the transmission of electricity from the DRC? And then on, in terms of biofuels, just my concern once again that that the interdepartmental task team is very quiet in regard to our clean energy multi prospects that we need to embark on. We have workshops in Brazil and India. Biofuel sectors are progressing. Is it not possible that we can learn more from the Brazilian experience? I think that's an area that we can explore. Chair, I think that's just the last question. I think it was on. Yes, on the nuclear, the bilateral engagements have been conducted and agreements concluded with Algeria, Korea, and China. I'd be interested to hear from the progress in terms of China. I also believe there was just the MOU. Has there been significant progress besides the MOU? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Khaldebe, Honourable Spanish. Thank you, Chair. Apologies, I actually didn't see my head. But my line that I would have, Chair, is that I'm trying to get an understanding that the USA, the oil trading, has increased in the African continent. The question that I always have is that why do we always have to, you know, compare our prices with the, you know, dollar price, pricing of our oil? This basically comes after the, you know, engagement that I've had this morning in the SAFM, where there was a lot of contradiction of what the department normally tells us. I don't know whether there was a person from the department, but, you know, it was relating around that matter. I tried to listen carefully, although it was noise that I couldn't get everything clear. But if you can be able to clarify more on that, one. Two, also, you know, try to emphasize or clarify the matter between the MOU, between the Republic of China and PetroFE, because also it came this morning as if, you know, some of us within our members are not understanding testing of what has happened. I know you've explained here, but you can jump over the email details in terms of what has happened. Because, you know, one of the other members went to the radio and went Alabado around each of the Forajum Tombo. Because I believe that, you know, a better clarification must be placed from the department once again, so that we can get clarity. But the last question that I have is that the department, in engagement with the Japan issue around the nuclear, the Fukushima incident, I'm trying to get an understanding that the relations that we have with the Fukushima incident, what has the department has done? Because, you know, you can go and have an experience and you learn what has happened and come to it in South Africa. But the only thing that we also have is that people around South Africa, they still don't understand what happened exactly. And in South Africa, whether do we have a plan in preventing such kind of situation? The question has been clarified many times, but I'm trying to understand that as you went again to have that clarity, or had that relation with the Fukushima nuclear disaster, and you have, you know, learned in terms of the experience, do you have any program in common reaching and intensify your awareness program to South Africans around this one? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Prof. Sorry. Okay, thank you, Chair. Let me start off with something that from the department that's not mentioned here. Why did our MOU and our treaty arrangements with Nigeria fail? Because we could not secure crude oil from Nigeria. I would like to understand that, because clearly the information that I've got is that we did not do certain things, but I would like to hear it from us, because when we moved our crude oil from Iran, when we had to look at the sanctions pre-Iran to secure crude oil, and there were deadlines to be met, to be met to buy Brent from, and even the Deputy Minister said that everything is in order in the house, and when the deadlines did come, we did not succeed in securing crude oil from South Africa, for South Africa. So please elaborate on that. Secondly, I would like to understand that the commitments by the department into these treaties. The reasoning is that if I look at this, it seems like we overcommit PetroSA's balance sheet to various programs or various explorations, and would you then agree that PetroSA should rather than focus maybe on what it does good, what it does well, and that is shale gas and maybe at coal bed methane, that we focus on those areas, and that we minimize our risk, especially on the exploration side. I also would like to understand under the MOUs that the risk that is being applied when we do negotiate treaties with other countries, that our security of supply for South Africa is more or less met, and I'm looking at the most recent agreement that was signed by a USA company on a Onatracco
on the Namibian coast, where they've got 80% and we've got 20% stake, but the input cost seems to outweigh the percentage of the 80-20%. And I'm just trying to understand how those risks are being negotiated under the MOUs. But you also then agree that looking into these treaties, you did mention that the 40,000 megawatts of the hydroelectricity that was done, or that might be a possibility at the DRC. You did not mention any possibility of, I was trying to listen to if you are mentioning South Africa, you did mention all the other lines going all over, but I was trying to understand, are there any plans for that power to come to South Africa? And if so, how much of that 40,000 megawatts is a possibility then to reach outsource us? And then, there was something else. A lot of these contributions, these forums, we pay substantial fees to them. And one of them that I call a substantial, and I'll do one, is the International Atomic Energy Agency. And I know that our contribution, our forecast to that, is 50 million rand, 1.5 million euros. That is our cost that we pay to link to these forums. Is there a way that we, in these speeches or somehow, that we monitor the value that we're actually getting out of it, that it really does benefit us? I know that there's some laboratory lab tests that might be going in between, but I'm just trying to understand that what are we really paying to these forums? These types of forums, and what is the actual output or the actual benefit to South Africa in this? And I'll take a second bite now.
Thank you, sir. My mind is not a question, that's a slight comment. I got the sense your presentation is more updated than ours. So much that sometimes I was losing. If I go, for example, to slides that when you're dealing with the DRC, there was a paragraph there that was saying something that I didn't have. It went to slide 12 in my electricity DRC. I'm gathering your version and our version. I can tell you again to slide 20. I can take you to slide 23. I'm not going to go through those. And I think your version is a more updated version than our version.
Thanks, bro. Suppose that... Oh, Teramla. Sorry, it is not
mine. Just three short ones. In our engagement with ESCOM, could be some weeks ago, they did mention that there were challenges on the substation on the Mozambican side, which was almost like hindering supply of electricity to South Africa. I just want to find out how far is that issue, has it been attended to? The second question would be on Mamabolo. What's the capacity of this project? Given that Botswana is a small country, where did they intend to sell the electricity? Last question would be on Project Mtombo. Have we made any firm decision whether we'll continue Project Mtombo or not, given the risks that are there in 2020 that we might be faced with the situation of importing a huge amount of a refined product?
Gita.
Oh, thank you, thank you. This floor is yours, but I just want to highlight one thing. I don't think you should feel pressurized to answer on behalf of that verse, because that verse does directly report to us. I'm sure other members will appreciate that. Not that you would know or be able to give anything, because in any case, operationally, but I say it does report to the department as well. And also, I think without defending you, the department has got to account to us, but surely all of the members, we have to appreciate some of the deals definitely at some stage cannot be diverted, at some stage can be diverted. So you will lead us on that. And we'll record that, because once you take, you indicate the status of this deal, the implication is that when you do a rejoinder of this, will affect you, you know, to take us through in detail each of the deals which maybe are still in the pipeline without being able to get much detail on. I really want you to tell that answer, but it doesn't mean that when I'm indicating that qualification, you guys are off the hook. Down the line, you'll have to come back and give a full detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would just give an indication of the areas where the department can respond and where we need to delay the response to the respective entities. We'll go through that. Maybe I should start from below, because those questions are still making ringing in my mind. But on the issue of the project in Mtombo, the commitment to the project, I think in principle, we are importing more and more products. And from a security of energy supply, it is very important, not just for South Africa, but for sub-Saharan Africa to have our own refineries in place to ensure security of supply. So the importance of Mtombo, I think, is definite. The timing of the project may be questionable, but that we need a refinery is very, very critical and very important. And I have a slide here which looks at the lack of integration, also which looks at the refineries in the sub-Saharan Africa in general and what is happening. But you can actually see that in the sub-Saharan Africa, most of our refineries are mothballed. Most of them, the technology is such that they cannot produce the quality of products that we need. And unfortunately as well, we have also had the unfortunate incident of international oil companies pulling out of sub-Saharan Africa and leaving behind what we call the independent traders, who are usually of no support. Will make the security and quality of products supplied on the continent very precarious. And as a result of that, it is very important that we have Project Mtombo on course and that we ensure that it is successful. If you also do an analysis of the supply of refined products, particularly in the SADC region, we progressively, as a total region, have a deficit, and we need to ensure that we do have Mtombo project. The issue may be on the timing of it, but the need of it is definite. If you also look at the life expectancy of our refineries in South Africa, they are on average over 40 years old, and you may hear noises coming from other quarters indicating that Mtombo project is a wasteful expenditure, it will be a white elephant, it's not necessary, but I would beg the members to go on the websites of those big companies and look at their international strategies. They are moving out of the continent because the continent has introduced the national oil companies. They want to make sure that they beneficiate their own products and get the value out of the beneficiation process. So the strategy of the most international oil companies is to move out of the downstream and expand their own refineries in their own countries and export to us, therefore perpetuating the syndrome of dependence and also putting our security of supply at their own mercy. So it is entirely up to us to say, do we listen to those noises or do we do what is in our own national interest, the security of supply. So I have no doubt in my mind with the facts that are on the table of the significance and importance of Mutombo. We may question the time. An analysis of our import figures as we speak now is showing a progressive increase in import of refined products. Is that what we want? I think I leave that to honorable members to answer. Thank you. On the issue of Mamabula, the megawatt for Mamabula is in changing, and I think now they are between 1,000 to 600 megawatts. So that's the figure. I'm not sure of the exact figure. I need to be pardoned for that. But in terms of where would this extra megawatts be going, I think as I've also indicated in my introduction when I was talking about the SADC region, SADC is a region we are going to have a deficit. And I think when I presented the last time, I said our marginal, what is it called, this reserve margin is around 5%, which is extremely low. And if the region is going to grow, we need more energy. So the market is there in the region, and also within South Africa. On our integrated resource plan, we have been allowing for import of thermal power. Then with respect to the Eskom project with Mozambique, I think that's an operational issue. I'm sorry, I am not aware of how far the issue has been resolved. But from a bigger issue and a bigger picture, I have given you a map of different interconnectors in the region, and I have also emphasized that the Eskom project for Mozambique is very critical. We need to ensure that as a region, we promote investment to ensure that our interconnectors are up to date and they are upgraded, and we can even move to smart grids in the region in order to facilitate the trade of electricity. And then there was also a question on the financial benefits of different memberships for the department, particularly the IAEA. I always confuse that, the abbreviations. Yes, we do pay a significant amount of money towards that particular organization, but we also have received a number of training for our officials, for NNR officials, for NECA officials. Then there are also studies that are being conducted by the IAEA, which on our own as an individual country will not be able to fund. And therefore, we have not really done cost-benefit analysis, but some of the benefits that we get, as an individual country, we cannot put substantive amounts of money required to conduct such studies. So from an analysis, my own analysis, which is not backed by figures, I think there are more benefits that are generated from a membership to the IAEA. It is an authoritative organization globally. It gives us standards on security. It also gives us standards on waste management. It also gives us standards on conducting studies, particularly now that the country is gearing on procurement and new build initiative. We need to learn and we need to use the best practice. That practice cannot come from South Africa, but it can only come from those international institutions whose norms and standards in doing business are related by all, and where the technology is also authenticated and approved for use. And the like, so the benefits in my mind are substantial, and the cost related to it, we have not really done a specific cost benefit analysis, but in my mind we do benefit more than the cost that we incur. Then on the grant being another member indicated that I didn't show that there is a benefit for South Africa. Definitely South Africa will be benefiting from the project. If the honorable member can recall, we intended to also develop the INGA 3 together with the GRC under the WECO project. The project was not did not come out as we anticipated, but the intention for South Africa to be involved is to ensure that we benefit. In terms of interconnectivity, we sometimes actually import power from the DRC. Each honorable member can recall the DRC during the World Cup 2010 committed to give South Africa about 150 megawatts on standby in case we needed it. So there is either connection currently, and we can buy power as we speak from the DRC if there is need for that. Then there was an indication from one of the EMRECO members that as the department we overcommit PetroSA into various projects. Maybe I need to explain how the agreements are coined. Before PetroSA can enter into an agreement with a country, it is important that there is a political agreement between government to government in order to make sure that we protect the investment. The TTI also works on the issue that we have an investment protocol agreement, and that in the Department of Energy we also have a broader overarching agreement, which then paves the way not only for PetroSA but also including for private companies. So our agreements are not committal. When PetroSA enters into its own agreement, it needs to ensure that that particular agreement is a commercial agreement, and the benefits out of it need to be purely commercial. They will have nothing to do with politics or with government to government, except that we have picked and opened the way for the company to participate in a given country, and that we provide them with the required protection through the investment and reciprocal investment protocols and so on and so forth. So PetroSA is up to it to use its skills and to use its capabilities to ensure that it coins a commercial agreement that is acceptable to its stakeholders, and it is also approved by its board. Then the treaties, I think I've also answered the issue on treaties. When we negotiate for agreements, the principle in South Africa is based on the foreign affairs, our foreign affairs principle is based on Ubuntu. It looks at reciprocal benefit, mutual benefit, and that is the principle that drives our foreign relations, and it also drives our international engagements as the South African Department of Energy. Then with respect to crude from Nigeria, there is was an issue that we did miss a deal. I'm not particularly aware of that deal. What I know in terms of procurement of crude from different entities, most of our oil companies are international. They make their own independent deals. The department doesn't get involved in those negotiations. The same also applies to PetroSA. It participates on the bids for especially if it is a spot crude, they participate and they are supposed to engage directly. But the details of that particular deal, I am not aware of them. Maybe the honorable member can pose that question to PetroSA. But government in particular is not in most cases directly involved in purchase of crude and in bidding for such crude. Then with respect to the Fukushima disaster, I think immediately after the Fukushima disaster, South African, I think Quebec, went through a stress test which was facilitated and conducted by the IAEA. So we have learned a lot. It is very important that when you build your nuclear infrastructure, the location is important, the proximity to fault lines is important, the estimation of the level of incident and measures that needs to be in place to ensure the protection is also very important. We are learning a lot, but a conclusive analysis of this will be of the disaster will be conducted sometime in December, and our minister has been invited, and I'm sure she will accept the invitation so that we receive a comprehensive report which can be also shared with the honorable members once it has been received by the department, and if indeed the department participates at the meeting that is scheduled in December. Then the China PetroSA Mutombo project, what I understand is that the department signed an agreement with the Chinese government, the People's Republic of China, and within that agreement there was a provision for PetroSA to engage with the Chinese government government companies or entities involved in the upstream, midstream and downstream. And PetroSA decided to have such an engagement with Sinovac out of their own accord. Sinovac, as I've indicated, is in the top 500 companies, the top 100 companies in the world, I think. Top 500 companies in the world, and it's a leader of Recon, and as I've indicated, there are a lot to be gained from. There are all now specific engagements in terms of whether Sinovac wants to be in the Mtombo project. It's something that it will become now a commercial agreement. It's something between PetroSA and Sinovac. If they can come to an agreement, I'm sure there will be a marriage in that particular project. There is also in the Sinovac PetroSA agreement provision for working together in terms of trading and in terms of upstream. So the details of that are commercial. And it will be really up to PetroSA, depending on the nature of the agreement, whether they can divulge such information. Then there was also a question on why we have our pricing of petroleum products in dollar. The honorable member, as you can be aware, all the crude trading is done in US dollars. And as a result of that, when we do our pricing, we need to also quote it in US dollars. When we do the monthly change in pricing, we track the crude price and we benchmark it, I think, with three different apps, and then we take an average and then we have a formula of calculating it, and then we can say this month there was an over recovery or this month there was an under recovery, and depending on the nature of the recovery, the price may go up or remain constant or go down. And I read people that have said that they need to pray about it. I think we need to seriously commit that to prayer, because we are in a bit of a trouble. But the reason why we do it in dollars is the product and commodity is traded in dollars. Then there was a question on China and the nuclear program. Yes, we have signed an agreement with the Chinese. Because we have signed that agreement, the Chinese have offered South Africa to conduct training as a state of readiness for the deployment of the nuclear program, a procurement program, and the nuclear build program. They've offered to train South Africans. They've also offered to train ESCOM officials to enhance our state of readiness in the event that we deploy our new nuclear build program. So there is something that is going on. The same also is applied to South Korea. They have also offered us training just to enhance our state of readiness for deployment purposes. You can't build it today and expect to have an engineer tomorrow. We must now start training the engineers in anticipation of that kind of development. So there isn't much, but something is happening. Then there was also an issue of the biofuels. My recommendation is that maybe it is very important, honorable member, that the members of this house maybe conduct a visit to such countries as India. And I would recommend that you also include Brazil. If you then for things like wind energy, you include Denmark, and then you include Germany on the trip, to have a comprehensive understanding of the renewable energy sector and how different countries have deployed it. In Germany, you will be looking at how technology development, innovation, and incremental innovation has taken place, and how then South Africa can also learn from the Germans. Then, as far as Denmark is concerned, it is a leader in the wind energy technology and deployment of wind energy. You can also learn about the technology and how wind energy has been deployed both onshore and offshore. Then if you look at India, they have also leaders in wind energy, but India is one of those countries that has imported the technology, innovated on it, and deployed it, and is now marketing the technology. So there is a lot to be learned. Then in Brazil, it is a leader in the biofuels industry, and you can also learn how they've managed to introduce biofuels, but also maintained food security. So that's the first recommendation I can give to the honorable members. Then one of the members indicated that the China Development Bank, what is it that we have done, and it needs more details on what we are doing. I think at this present time, I think we are negotiating the terms of the fund. We have a different. If we are going to get money from other countries, we need to make sure that the fund meets our needs. But whoever is also issuing the funds, they have to account for their money. They have their own terms. We are at that point where we are discussing the terms. It's not an easy negotiation. It's quite protracted, but we are negotiating, and we hope that we will reach an agreement and that we'll be able to access the funds. I think we are all aware, members, that honorable members, that the Chinese market is one of the liquid markets. Globally, they have more US dollars, quite a significant reserve of US dollars that we can also take from. So it is an important stakeholder, and we are taking that particular initiative very seriously. Then the honorable member indicated that I need to show you the map, but not the details. You are right, the Western cluster is the Eastern cluster and the Southern cluster in terms of the gas. We are aware of that. We are also aware that the country is committed to reducing the carbon footprint, particularly our president has indicated that we need to ensure that we reduce the carbon footprint of the country, and energy sector is one of the drivers that can assist the country to reduce our carbon footprint. My colleagues in the gas section and in the hydrocarbon section assist with this matter. Unfortunately, I didn't get a briefing on them on the state of development of the gas plants of the sector. In future, I think I must read around everything and ensure that I just don't talk to agreement only, but I can talk to what is happening in the country. But from a regional perspective, our discussions on the Mozambican Gas Commission and the Namibian Gas Commission are also gearing on developing a gas to have a consultation on the development of a gas regional plan to make sure that we take advantage of the asset that is being discovered in the region. I can't remember some of the questions now. I think the national. The other issue was the question on the marginal block in Venezuela. When we say marginal blocks, it means those are. In fact, I must start off by saying the member said I didn't mention about the outcome of the Equatorial Guinea initiative by Petro SA. The honorable member was correct by indicating that investment in the upstream is a high-risk business, and the success rate may be 5 to 10% elsewhere, 5 to 15% elsewhere. So the failure rate is something up to 90%. So it's a very high-risk business. But I'm glad to mention that the Petro SA policy has shifted. Instead of looking at vision blocks, they are looking at now moving from upstream and exploration into buying, into producing and near producing assets. Basically what it means is they will not go into a block where there is no certainty of the availability of a product in that block. So when we talk about the marginal fields in Venezuela, there are fields that have got reserves, but the reserves are not very big. When big companies are operating, when you are at a certain level, just like in mining, you can actually say it is more economically viable for a small operator to exploit that block than for a big operator. So that is what they want for. So the certainty of the product is there. What they are negotiating is the physical regime to say what interest rate should they pay, what kind of bonuses, what kind of things that are supposed to be given to those particular blocks. But there is definitely something there. And this is now the policy of Petro SA to move to producing and or near producing assets with something. So they are now moving away from the block. Then there is a perception that the government or the department is kind of pulling Petro SA into specific initiatives. It doesn't work like that. We go into a country, we create a conducive environment for move in, then Petro SA must move in if it wants to. It has to negotiate a commercial contract like any other company. If it is good for them, they go ahead. If it's not good, they don't. We have even also moved a stage further to say to our SOE, we need now to have a strategy so that on our part, we don't waste our money approaching a country where Petro SA is not interested, our big companies are not interested, our SOEs are not interested. So we have developed a strategy where they say, these are the countries which have got potential. These are the countries where we want the department and the minister and our political principles to open opportunities for us. So we are becoming more tighter, more strategic in our approach and synchronizing our needs. So we are doing that, and we are not pulling any of our SOEs to be involved in what is not of commercial interest to them and to the country. Yes, and there was also my colleagues reminding me that there was a question on Namibia where Petro SA is supposed to, there is a 2080 split on the block, and but in terms of the contribution of input, the cost contribution, I think that is what the honorable member wanted to say, there is no arrangement of that. Maybe you are indicating that Petro SA is being more than what it should be. I'm not aware of that, but it doesn't make commercial sense to have a deal like that. But it will be best responded to by Petro SA. Thank you, Jane.
Any follow up, honourable members, honourable Mande?
Yes, thank you, Jane. I'm not interested into the MOUs or the treaties that the Department of Trade and Industry or Foreign Affairs are going into, because really, it's a focus on your department, because you said that when you did the treaties with Sinotech or with China, that there were provisions for Petro SA. And let me explain my question then to say, when you look at these memorandums of understanding or that your department is going into or assisting to negotiate, do you make sure that there's some sort of feasibility study or commercial study that accompanies these sort of agreements or these assistance by your department before you actually enter into these sort of discussions? When we spoke about the security of oil and gas, and probably I want to maybe touch on biofuels, but I might need your assistance in this if it's not for the department. I'm trying to understand the assistance or the incentives by the department or by yourself in trying to negotiate some of these treaties, because a lot of the international communities do offer incentives, especially in cleaner fuels, cleaner energy programs. Do you assist as a department in negotiating or making sure that those memorandum of understandings, because that's the topic of today, is actually in place to make sure that these things do happen and actually is happening? Because sometimes the uptake is very slow from our side, but it is, I'm just trying to understand where the blockage is for those aspects to actually to go on.
Thank you, Jane. I think maybe I need to explain the MOU, the agreements, and how companies are involved, like Petro SA. and I must also indicate that we are tabling our arguments, so to color it, that we expect. So honorable members can have access to those agreements. The submission is on its way. That would really assist. When the department negotiates an MOU, we don't stick to companies. We don't sign with individual companies. With the exception of in China, like the China Development Bank, the Director General signed an agreement with the China Development Bank because they wanted to assist. The Director General can also sign with the World Bank or the International Finance Corporation, the IFC. But we don't sign an agreement with Sinopec. It's Citro SA that signs an agreement with Sinopec. And that is a purely commercial agreement. What we sign is more of a government-to-government, more of a political agreement. Within our agreement, it provides for a relationship to be formed between company-to-company and, but in our side, in the energy sector, like Citro SA. Then there is also the DTI one, which is separate from ours, which talks to issues related to trade. So those company-to-company agreements, especially between Sinopec and PetroEasy, it is a purely commercial agreement. It has got nothing to do with politics. The only time maybe when the government can be involved is, for example, if it is a block that they want to access, and then the country says we want a signature bonus of 1 billion. Maybe the minister can go to the minister to say, we are a more developing, a federal is a more developing national oil company, it doesn't have huge reserves. Can the minister consider to lower signature bonuses for petrol? But really, those are purely commercial, we don't get involved. If, for example, the fiscal regime is also too high, we can try, but it's not guaranteed because most of these blocks we are buying there with the likes of Total, the likes of Shell, they with deep pockets. So we really, it's purely commercial. So we can only open the way from a political perspective, but the commercial deals are strictly commercial and they have nothing to do with us. And Petro SA reports to its board. And the board is the one which says, this is commercially feasible, go ahead, or it's not commercially feasible, don't go ahead and detain the particular team. I'm not sure whether I have clarified. Then in terms of incentives, I know that there are incentives that are given by other countries on clean fuels, and the honorable member may have had that issue from our on a local government who may want incentives for the move to cleaner fuels. I used to be the director of hydrocarbons in the energy sector, in the Department of Energy. And we have noted that some countries give incentives for moving to cleaner fuels earlier than anticipated. But it depends on the countries themselves, it depends on the mechanisms of subsidizing such kind of initiatives, the systems that they have, and in some of those countries, the prices are not regulated, so they are able to give that kind of incentives. But in South Africa, because we have a regulated price, if you give that type of incentive, you must also be putting in place a way of recuperating it, and it can only be through the pricing. And you can drive the price of petroleum products into the roof, and that has got major implications on the economy itself. So you need to trade on such grounds very carefully because we have regulated the price. So in the international negotiations, you know, we don't negotiate issues like that. So it's also a question that will be posed to our DTG responsible for hydrocarbons and the clean energy. So the Clean Fuels Initiative and what is it that they are doing in order to promote the introduction of clean fuels in the country. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ms. Marala. From my side, that are there any arguments or theories that are on their way to be tabled here in Parliament? Well, that could be of interest to us. I think I take cue also from one of those smaller questions that we need to be, you know, fairly affair with the benefits from both the international forums which we participate in, and of course also that links up with the various settlements. You know, we know that they are there, but it would be helpful. I don't think we have to rush them to bring them here, but it would be good to have a sense. I'm sure you'll appreciate that I mean, it's advantage because I came at the tail end of the presentation. But suffice to say that that has to be emphasized in any case. Furthermore, is there any strategy to address the power deficit in SADC? I know the trading, I know that SADC or Southern Africa is has to have a formal arrangement within the member countries as compared to other African regions. But what one is interested in that kind of formal trading arrangement, does it include in order to address the deficit? Unless we had, you know, set something around the Continental Drive. As someone who attended the conference for the Council of African Ministers on Energy in September last year, it was quite a striking and instructive event, honorable members. In fact, it's striking that each and every country in Africa is doing something and seized with that. Probably it would be helpful, Memorial, for you to share that with all of us, the outcome. Not just the declaration, because the declaration is not going to, it captures just the gist, you know. But what I'm coming to is that there were also a major flagship, let's say, energy projects, you know, throughout Africa in various regions. It would be helpful if you could facilitate sharing that with us, so that we also have a view of what is happening and the extent to which South Africa is also involved in that. I also raised the issue of NEPAD engagement in that as well, what I know from Professor Elmisri, who handles energy issues in NEPAD. That's one of the areas that he is very keen on, our members, that as African parliamentarians, not just as South Africa, we do our best to conduct oversight on those flagship projects. Of course, I don't expect you to go to town to explain them, but I'm highlighting that. And also, it's making a foothold on the members that in the future who will, in conjunction with other African parliamentarians, you know, engage in those things, you know. In the whole work they have indicated, from hydrocarbon to gas, nuclear and renewable energy in particular, because there are quite a number of initiatives that have been done. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I should start off with the energy infrastructure, Peter. It's called Peter. I can't remember what the abbreviation means. But in the African continent, we do have infrastructure projects that are focusing on energy. In fact, I think 60% of the infrastructure projects are on energy on the continent. We are participating in the Peter program and promoting the development of infrastructure, and I'm sure you're aware that our president is the current chairperson of the African Energy Infrastructure Development Program, and among it are energy specific projects from the different countries. And I recall that there is, for example, a project on the hydroelectricity in Ethiopia, there is the Mozambique one. There is the DRC one. There is also the big solar projects in North Africa, the CSP, that is the concentrated solar power, the photovoltaic in one point into which all those sons are across the Sahara Desert in North Africa. So they are a lot. Maybe we can, in conjunction with the PIDA desk at GICO, present the energy infrastructure projects that are taking place on the continent. Some of those projects, we are doing it together with some European companies. So the countries like France, recently, I think at the beginning of the year, France hosted a conference on energy infrastructure program on the continent. And there are different international stakeholders that are interested. That is a big topic on its own, and we can, with the assistance of our colleague from GICO, do a presentation on what we are doing in that respect. Then one of the outcomes of the African Energy Minister program was to also put together a number of projects on the continent that can be classified as a flagship project, and that would also assist in focusing the interest of potential investors on the continent. And a list of those, I didn't anticipate such a question. There are so many projects that we listed, but what was agreed was that each regional power pool needs to take ownership of their own regional projects, and they must encourage member countries to move from just naming the projects, but to move into feasibility studies, pre-feasibility studies, and then feasibility studies in a field in order to make sure that those projects are implemented. But one of the important outcomes of the conference was that most of our African countries are able to identify projects, but they don't have the adequate financial resources to even conduct the pre-feasibility and feasibility studies. So what has been happening is that in our engagements with international stakeholders, we have been flagging the need for the African countries to be assisted in conducting the pre-feasibility and feasibility studies to convert these projects into bankable projects. And the U.S. has actually come up with a fund which the kind of commissioned during the Rio Plus 20 by the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I think they put in about 100 million into those feasibility studies. Then the African Development Bank also made a commitment to set aside funds for conducting feasibility studies. They indicated that they will put a maximum of 2 million per study so that it can assist the African countries to not just identify potential flagship studies but correct pre-feasibility and feasibility studies to now convert those projects into bankable projects. So that is now happening, and funding is slowly but progressively coming into place. And the UN Secretary General also at Rio Plus 20 at a conference, and they raised a significant amount of money to conduct pre-feasibility and feasibility studies for especially developing countries, as long as those projects for sustainable energy and clean energy carriers. So we, out of the African Declaration, through the same this conference of African Energy Ministers, ministers highlighted so many of their challenges. They highlighted the flagship projects, but they also indicated that they don't have sufficient funds to conduct the studies, and that money is now slowly but surely creeping in. So we can say it's one of the achievements of the African Energy Ministers Conference in preparation for the COP17. In your absence, Chair, we also discussed the Africa-EU Energy Partnership. I also indicated the specific targets of those particular initiatives and what is being done to operationalize the commitment of the ministers and their aspirations. And we really discussed that in a bit of a detail. Then you have also, we wanted to know whether there are any agreements to be tabled to Parliament. Yes, we have, most of the agreements that we have signed have not been tabled. So we have now done a submission to ensure that we can table all those agreements to Parliament. And the submission is on its way. As soon as it is tabled, we will inform our colleague that it has been tabled so that the honourable members can have access to the other means. Then, in terms of the benefit to the bilateral and multilateral engagements that we are conducting, I need to highlight that, for example, in the hydrocarbon section, a project to even in electricity, a project to be tangible, it takes a long time. The lead times for energy projects are different from the lead times for other projects like maybe a shopping mall. For energy projects, we are talking of a minimum of 5 years, maybe 5 to 10 years for a power station to be developed, to be launched, your feasibility, that is, your pre-feasibility, feasibility, fit, construction, and commissioning. The same also applies to the your blocks. You do the exploration, then you do your well appraisal, now, then you do the construction, then you do the operationalization, then you start producing. That can take 5 to 7 years depending on the size of the asset. So because we've been signing this agreement, some of the areas where our companies have been going have not been successful. Some of them have been partially successful. So the actual tangible results will take some time to be feasible. But then we also have issues related to training. I think what we need to do is to then put together information on, say, what were the training that we offered to the department, how much did it cost, how much did it save the department, and make it part of our report. So we may look at doing that so that we can at least speak to short-term low-hanging fruits that can be generated from our relationship. And then be able to table that to honorable members. Then the benefits from forums. I think one of the benefits that I can mention is that the International Energy Forum, which I indicated is a forum of producing countries and consuming countries, one of the projects that has been done by that initiative is to produce a booklet known as the Joint Oil Data Initiative, where South Africa also contributes in terms of information on our oil and gas consumption. What that booklet has done was, instead of everybody depending on the BP statistical book that they produce on oil and gas, now we have another independent source without interest that is also generating authentic information on oil and gas. So it's one of those tangible products of our initiative. And then we also have research output that comes out of that International Energy Forum. That information can be accessed on their website. It talks to issues of investment, it talks to issues of pricing, it even discusses issues of speculation in the oil prices, it also talks to the geopolitics of oil and gas and so on and so forth. And that information is being produced by a neutral organization, so the authenticity of the information is not very questionable. Whereas if it is coming from a professional organization which has got an inclination to that profession and subscribers are members of maybe for the Oil and Gas Association, you can take with a pinch of salt the output of such a researcher. So those are some of the benefits that we are getting from the organization such as the International Energy Forum. Then the Clean Energy Ministerial, where I have also indicated that, for example, they are supporting the development of the Global Wind Atlas. Countries are contributing money into it, and the International Renewable Energy has been given funds to develop the Wind Atlas for the world, but also a more detailed Wind Atlas for Africa. So that is another benefit that is coming out of the relationship. Then I have also indicated that in our relationship with Denmark, we have been able to produce the Wind Atlas for South Africa, and we are now engaged in the Wind Awareness Campaign. A booklet has been developed, and information will be disseminated via different stakeholders, such as our schools, our communities, so that we sensitize our communities to the benefit of wind energy. Then we also are members to initiatives like the Smart Grid Initiative, where funds can be available for South Africa and for any other member countries to conduct usability studies by actually putting in place a smart grid initiative on a small area, identifying the basis of it, and then considering rolling it out. So those benefits are there, but we have not put resources together to be able to quantify each benefit of the total benefit from our own international engagement. But that there are benefits is definite. On the other hand, we also need to understand that as they engage with us, they also have the mutual benefit. Some of the countries want to sell their technology, they want to market their technologies. From our side, we want to learn about the technologies, we want to deploy them, we want to have an understanding of those technologies and also facilitate the technology transfer. But there hasn't been any specific study to give an objective quantitative analysis of the relationship that we have conducted. Then, if we have any strategy to address the power deficit in the southern region, I think there is a strategy because we have identified that there is a power deficit. We have identified that there are projects that can be implemented to meet that power deficit. The South African initiative and interest in the grant INGA is to ensure that there is a substantial power that can be generated from the grant INGA, which can then be deployed and used to address our power deficit. We are moving with the project aggressively. I think it's a demonstration of our interest in ensuring that we have a security of supply in the region, and that the SAPP, the Southern African Power Pool, benefits from such development. Then as a region, SADC has also developed a regional energy master plan. And in that master plan, it has identified all the gaps in the energy sector and in the electricity sector in particular, and they are encouraging member countries to ensure that they put a financial investment into those projects to make sure that we meet our needs, and the meta was discussed at the summit, and it will also be discussed at the Ministers of Energy Summit sometime in October. So there are actually plans in place, there are actually processes to make sure that we address the energy deficit in the region. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Marara. Please have an energy master plan. I'm sure it would be very helpful if you share that with us, because it would give us the detail of what's missing for now. And also, I'm sure all of the members at some stage interacting with other parliamentarians, both in the South African continent, that it would be a very helpful thing. You know, we're part of the whole, we're part of the regional continent, and I'll be bringing soon, and I just a suggestion on how we can go about doing that. It's very important, because whilst the department may have taken us through as to how they are engaging on international issues, but the friendship begins at home, and our home is the region in particular, because we are integrated with the region. No matter how much we have to formalize that, but already integrated in various forms, especially economically, and even politically, which even would be more, once we even have a permanent parliament. And I'm sure also the startup economic, regional economic integration structure or program does include, amongst other things, energy. Probably the regional energy master plan would have to relate to that. Of course, energy does not just look at economic development or social aspect of our life, but that's one other area that is important. And in conclusion, I suppose one of the things that members have said, I deliberately provoke this is of energy diplomacy, so that we can have a sense to what extent and in what way does the department engage with the DIRCO and TI in particular in tapping from their engagements, you know, or for the benefit of the country, but on energy issues, let's say, and it has come through, but hopefully as we go along, you know, we'll pick up and that sector will mature and we'll be able to engage with the members more productively in future. The same
up with energy and climate change, you know, because that's another area. I know bits and pieces of it. It's about cleaner fuels, about energy efficiency, it's about the renewable energy itself. But without necessarily responding now, but I'm sure we should keep that as a basis of our minds that we shouldn't just look at energy and climate change when in the context of when COP17, COP18, COP19 comes, but also in this context as well, because at the end of the implementation would relate to quite a number of issues. And your World Energy Forum, so IEA, World Energy Council, IRENA, and the rest of them, they are bound one or another to engage in these things, which is one of the questions that we want to know repeatedly and more substantively in future is, to what extent are you benefiting the country in these various forums? In terms of the agreement of treaties, we welcome that. I'm sure some of us, we have the history of having agreements in other committees, particularly myself on trade and industry. And one of the things we will have to grapple with in the future is whether what is harmed with the already cooked menu, whether I wouldn't like to have a preview on that at any stage, just to have a sense of how things are. We'll take that up down the line. Other members, I'm sure, this is helpful to a limited extent, I must say, on how energy sustainability is contextualized, both at continental and global level. I really would like us to agree that at certain intervals, the department must come and regularly update us on international issues. I'm sure in the departments there will appreciate that we didn't just invite them. Of course, there was a gap, but it was also to ensure that we start upping up the skills and the character of how we would like to conduct oversight on international issues. We're aware that we did invite you earlier this year, but the second sense was more substance, and I'm sure we'll ask for more in future, so that we are able to do our part appropriately. But as for now, this is how far we can go as members, and let me thank them as well. And also, one is taking note of your suggestions on study visits. Of course, on the members next month, we'll have to grapple with that in preparation for next year, because next year is the 2-year cycle of going international. Remember, last time was 2010. Now, 2011 and 2012, we were outside the cycle of going international. Yes, I'm sorry if you are not aware. Yes, it's a cycle. A group of parliamentary unions are allocated every 2-year cycle, so we're coming back now next year. So we'll have to do heavy negotiations. Where and whom do we visit for study visits? And on that note, let me thank everyone for attending. I hope this has been fruitful and this will provoke us as well to look more and more. Maybe just as a parting shot, I trust and hope I've said this before. The library has got about 4 online magazines or periodicals on energy. And I would invite members to go into the website of the, I think it's an intranet, probably. It's an intranet. About 4 of them, there could be more. I'm raising this because I'm sure in those magazines there are a couple of articles on energy at international level, giving you updates, inputs from various experts and other likes. And please do invest on that as well. Because I take the library for the benefit of this country, not just myself personally. On that note, Bairangi, Danishon. The meeting stands adjourned. Don't forget tomorrow up to Friday, we're doing energy efficiency. We already have a couple of submissions done. It's going to be an exciting time. Thank you very much.